Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're doing something, well, a little different.
A little bit, yeah.
Usually we take a stack of reports and research to figure out, you know, what is happening in the world, the facts on the ground.
Right.
But today, we're looking at how those facts are packaged, how they're sold and delivered to you. We're putting on our detective hats, but not for a crime scene.
Right.
We're investigating persuasion.
Or maybe a masterclass in it. It's definitely a masterclass. Whether you agree with the politics or not, the mechanics were just fascinating.
It's the difference between studying the car engine and studying the car commercial.
Oh, that's a perfect way to put it.
Because the commercial we're analyzing happened just 2 days ago, Thursday, January 29th, 2026. The scene is Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been tracking the headlines at all, you know the Twin Cities are basically a powder keg right now.
Powder keg might be an understatement. Seriously, you have this massive surge of, what, about 3,000 federal agents?
ICE, Border Patrol, all operating in the city.
Right. And you have the death of Alex Petty, a civilian shot during a law enforcement operation, which has people, you know, rightfully asking a lot of questions.
And the protests are just getting larger and louder by the hour. It is a high-pressure environment.
An absolute pressure cooker.
And into this walks Tom Homan, the man everyone calls the Border Czar, to give a press conference.
Right.
Now, I want to be really clear up front. Our mission today is not to debate immigration policy. We're not here to say who's right or who's wrong about the border.
No, that's for the cable news panels. Our stack of sources today is focused purely on the mechanics of persuasion. We've got the raw CNN transcript of Homan's speech.
Yep.
But we've overlaid that with a rhetorical analysis of his language and some pretty heavy-hitting academic research on propaganda theory, people like Laswell, Herman, and Chomsky.
So we're decoding the message. We want to show you the gears and levers turning inside a political speech. Because once you see them, these concepts like securitization or selective humanization, you realize they're happening everywhere.
It's not just in a Minneapolis press conference. It's in your news feed. It's on your TV every single day. The goal is that by the end of this, you won't just hear a speech. You'll see the blueprint behind it.
Okay, so let's get into the room. Homan steps up to the mic. The vibe is heavy. What's his opening move?
Yeah.
Because reading the transcript, he doesn't come out swinging. He actually sounds surprisingly reasonable.
Well, that's the first trap. We call this the classic playbook of crisis management. He builds his message on three main pillars. First, he admits operations haven't been perfect.
Okay.
Second, he makes a conditional offer to draw down the federal agents. And third, he pivots to targeted enforcement.
Let's talk about that imperfection bit.
Yeah.
He says, quote, "I'm not here because the federal government has carried this mission out perfectly. Nothing's ever perfect."
And on the surface, that disarms you. It sounds like humility, like he's being real with you.
It feels like accountability, but what is it actually doing?
Well, this is a technique called strategic ambiguity. By admitting to this general abstract flaw, nothing is perfect, he creates a buffer.
Right.
But notice what he does not admit to.
He doesn't mention the shooting of Alex Petty's. He doesn't mention any of the specific overreaches that local officials are complaining about.
Exactly. He confesses to being human, but he doesn't confess to being wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to inoculate himself against criticism.
Yeah.
So if you say, this operation is a mess, he can just say, well, I told you it wasn't perfect.
It shifts the frame from wrongdoing to something like process improvement.
It's a very clever deflection.
But the part that really stood out to me was the second pillar, the promise to leave. He says, the drawdown can happen even more if the hateful rhetoric will stop.
And this is where the strategy shifts from being defensive to offensive.
Yeah.
This is what we call conditional mercy.
It sounds like a hostage negotiation. I'll let the hostage go if you put down the megaphone.
That is exactly the dynamic he's creating. He's reframing why the 3,000 agents are there in the first place. In his telling, they aren't there because of a federal policy choice.
They're there because the community is misbehaving. Precisely. He's saying, I want to leave, but you won't let me because you keep protesting. It flips the causality entirely.
So instead of the protest being a reaction to the agents.
The agents become a reaction to the protests, and it creates this leverage point. If you're an average citizen who wants things to go back to normal, who do you get mad at?
Not Homan. You get mad at the protesters who are keeping the agents there.
He turns the community against itself.
That leads perfectly into the second major theme we found. The whole architecture of us versus them. It's not just a general vibe. It's built into every single sentence.
This is selective humanization. It's one of the oldest, most primal tools in the propaganda toolkit. You've got two groups in this story, the federal agents and the protesters.
I pulled the quotes side by side. It is jarring. When he talks about his agents, he gets so descriptive. He says they don't hang their heart on a hook. He calls them mothers and fathers.
And he goes even deeper. He uses what's called moral elevation by focusing on their trauma. He tells these graphic stories, babies thrown in rivers by cartels, women being raped. He's painting a picture of the agent as a traumatized savior.
It creates what the research calls an empathy shield, right?
Yes. Think about it. How hard is it to criticize someone after you've just heard they saved a baby from a river?
Impossible.
If you criticize the operation now, you're not just debating policy. You're attacking a traumatized father who has seen horrors you can't imagine. It makes being critical feel, you know, morally wrong.
But then you look at how he talks about the other side, the citizens. Does he mention their families, their fears, the trauma of seeing armed agents on their block?
You know, none of it.
They're just agitators. He uses words like hostile rhetoric, impeding, obstruction.
It's the flip side. It's othering and scapegoating. The agents are flesh and blood. They have complex emotions. The citizens are just faceless obstacles. They're sources of disorder.
He creates this moral hierarchy where the agents are heroes and the dissenters are threats.
Exactly.
There's this one moment that really nails this. Homan talks about funerals. He says, I've buried Border Patrol agents. The saddest thing I've ever done is hand a folded flag to a wife. You feel that. But we have a dead civilian in Minneapolis, Alex Petty. Where's his folded flag in this speech?
And that absence is the point. Which brings us to the third technique, and maybe the most frustrating one. Gaslighting through what we're calling asymmetrical certainty.
This part drove me crazy. In the Q&A, a reporter asked specifically about the new video of the Alex Petty shooting.
And watch the pivot. Homan immediately shuts it down. He says, I'm not going to comment on any of these shootings. Let the investigation play out. He becomes this rigorous, prudent professional. We need facts. Can't jump to conclusions.
Right. So when it's about state violence, the official line is, it's complex. We don't know yet.
But when he talks about the protesters.
Oh, suddenly the complexity just vanishes. He's 100% certain. He says, quote, I said in March, if the rhetoric didn't stop, there was going to be bloodshed. And there has been.
He draws a straight causal line, protesters speak.
Leads to violence. Full stop. No investigation needed there.
That is the asymmetry. The state's actions are shrouded in necessary procedure. We must wait for the report. The public's actions are simple, direct causes of chaos. It's a form of gaslighting.
It tells you, you can't trust your own eyes on that video, but you must trust my assertion about who's to blame.
Mm-hmm. And he does the same thing with crime statistics. He drops this line. More people in the jail means less people on the street. It's simple math.
The simple math fallacy. It's so seductive because it sounds like pure common sense.
But any criminologist will tell you that's not how it works. When you arrest thousands of people, you disrupt families, you remove breadwinners, you can collapse local economies. That often leads to more crime down the line.
But simple math just shuts down all that nuance.
Exactly. It justifies mass incarceration with a subtraction problem. And if you argue against it, you look like you don't understand basic arithmetic. It's a trap.
I want to zoom out a bit. We've dissected the specific words, the simple math, the folded flags. But there's a bigger theory here the sources mention. Securitization.
It is so crucial. It comes from the Copenhagen School of International Relations. Securitization isn't just about making things safe. It's a specific rhetorical act. It's when a political actor frames an issue not as a normal political problem.
But as an existential threat.
Right. It's the difference between saying we need to fix the roof and the house is on fire.
If the roof leaks, we can debate quotes from contractors. We can check the budget.
But if the house is on fire, you don't debate. You break down the door, you smash the windows, you do whatever it takes. Securitization moves an issue out of the realm of democracy and into the realm of emergency.
And Homan does this so explicitly. He's not talking about visa overstays. He's talking about sex trafficking, fentanyl deaths, suspected terrorists.
He raises the stakes to the absolute maximum. He links the operation in Minneapolis directly to dead children and cartels. He says, a secure border saves lives. By framing it that way, he bypasses the democratic debate.
He even throws out a number. He says, when 96% less people come in, the data proves it. But I looked at the footnotes in our analysis. He doesn't actually cite the source of that data.
And that's the beauty of securitization. The threat is so overwhelming that the specifics matter less than the feeling of danger. And this connects directly to Herman and Chomsky's propaganda model. Homan is manufacturing consent.
How so?
Well, he frames the narrative so there are only two positions. If you support his operation, you support public safety and saving children. If you oppose his operation, even for perfectly valid reasons,
then you're on the side of the cartels and the fentanyl dealers.
By definition, it's a binary choice. You are either with us or you're with the bad guys. There is no middle ground for a legitimate critic.
And that person, the legitimate critic, is just erased from the narrative. They don't exist in Homan's world. Now, you'd think the media would catch this. But looking at the CNN coverage afterward, I noticed something interesting.
This is where we get into agenda setting theory. The media doesn't necessarily tell you what to think, but it tells you what to think about. And critically, it often adopts the language of the powerful.
I watched the clips. The anchors, Sarah Seidner and Priscilla Alvarez, they kept repeating the phrase targeted enforcement. And they noted that Homan's tone was subdued.
They fell into the style trap. Because he wasn't yelling, they describe him as subdued, which normalizes the content. And by repeating targeted enforcement, they are letting Homan write the headline for them.
But in the same speech, I have it right here, Homan says, if you're in the country illegally, you're never off the table.
Which is the exact opposite of targeted. Never off the table means everyone is a target.
It means mass deportations.
But because Homan gave them the word targeted, that's the word they ran with. The media acts as a filter, but in this case, the filter failed. They inadvertently sanitized the operation by using the state's own language.
So you have the official spinning the narrative and the media amplifying the frame. The big question is, why does this work on us? I mean, we like to think we're smart, rational people.
It's not about intelligence. You can have a PhD and still fall for this. It's about cognitive sociology and how our brains process information in an infodemic.
The sources mentioned the demand side of propaganda.
Right. We are just flooded with information. Our brains are tired. So we use shortcuts, which psychologists call heuristics. Patriotism is a shortcut. Safety is a shortcut. Fear is a massive shortcut.
So when Homan tells that story about the baby in the river, what's happening in my brain?
He's activating your System 1 thinking. This is from Daniel Kahneman. System 1 is fast, emotional, instinctive. It hears dead baby and it just screams, protect. It doesn't ask for citations. It's a biological response.
And System 2?
System 2 is the slow, analytical, logical part of your brain. System 2 is the part that asks, wait, how does arresting a cook in Minneapolis stop a cartel in Mexico? But engaging System 2 takes effort. It takes calories. It actually physically costs you energy.
And Homan knows that. His whole speech is designed to keep you in System 1.
The emotional stories, the urgent threats, it's all meant to bypass your analytical filter so you never even engage that critical thinking.
Okay, so let's help people turn System 2 back on. We promised a toolkit. If you're watching the news tonight and you see press conference like this, how do you spot these tricks?
The source material offers a great framework. It's called the 5 A's. It's basically a checklist for media literacy.
Let's do it. First one is aim.
Just ask yourself, what is the goal here? What does this message want me to think or feel or do? In Homan's case, the aim is to make you feel fear of the border and sympathy for the agents. He wants you to equate protest with danger.
Okay, second is author.
Who is speaking? Homan isn't a neutral observer. He's the border czar. His career, his legacy, it all depends on this operation being seen as a success. He has a massive vested interest.
Third is audience.
Who is this for? And it's often for more than one group. He's talking to a national audience to say, we're tough. But he's also talking to the local protesters in Minneapolis to say, we are watching you, back down.
Fourth is approach.
How is it said? This is where you look for the techniques. Is he using logic or emotion? Is he using us versus them framing? Is he using that simple math trick? When you feel that emotional pull, that's the approach working on you.
And finally, accuracy.
What is actually checkable here? When he says 96% less people, don't just let that wash over you. Ask, what data? What history? Where is the citation? If he says the data proves it, but doesn't show the data, that is a huge red flag.
I love that. Aim. Author, audience, approach, accuracy. It's like a mental shield.
It forces you to engage System 2. It forces you to slow down. And in a world of high-speed information, slowing down is the most radical thing you can do.
That's really the takeaway here, isn't it? We looked at 1 hour in Minneapolis, and we uncovered this whole universe of persuasion tactics.
We did. We saw securitization making immigration an existential threat to kill debate. We saw selective empathy humanizing the powerful, dehumanizing the powerless. It's a whole playbook.
It's a lot to process. But once you see it, you really can't unsee it.
And that's the point. The goal of this deep dive isn't to tell you what to think about the border or Tom Homan. It's to help you see how you're being told to think about it.
Before we go, I want to leave you with one final thought. We talked about how Homan used language to redefine reality.
Yeah, defining protesters as agitators and an occupation as cooperation.
Right. And this connects to the philosopher John Searle and his concept of status functions. Mm. Institutions like the border or public safety or even money, they only exist because we all collectively agree on what they mean. They're built on shared belief and language.
So here's a thought. If our social reality is built on language, what happens when a skilled communicator changes the definition of those words right in front of us? If they can successfully redefine safety to mean mass arrests or patriotism to mean silence, are we just watching a press conference?
Or are we watching reality being rewritten in real time? Are we watching the news or are we watching the construction of a new world? Something to think about. Thanks for joining us on The Deep Dive.
Stay curious.